Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research. The Sunday Roast presents 12 stocks for the 12 days of Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the 12 stocks for the 12 days of Christmas. Today we're joined by James Short, CEO of Celadon. Merry Christmas, James, and welcome.
Merry Christmas, Phil and Kevin. Thank you for having me on again.
Absolutely. So 2023 has been quite the year for Celadon, starting in January with the registration for Good Manufacturing Practice, GMP. March saw the Home Office license being successfully updated to allow the commercial sale of your high THC product. May brought your inaugural supply contract win with a leading UK medicinal cannabis company. August saw LVL Health, your private pain clinic, receiving approval from the NHS Research Ethics Committee to roll out the non-cancer chronic pain clinical trial for up to 5,000 patients. And just recently, a new sales contract with a European medicinal cannabis company having the potential to generate revenue to Celadon of up to £26 million of product, £8.7 million annually over the three-year term. Sounds like quite the year in review, James.
You know, it hasn't been an overnight success. You know, this has been 5 years in the making. It's just, you know, now that, as you've said, we've got our approval to sell the product into the market, it's started to bring to fruition, you know, all the hard work that the team has been doing over the five-year period. With the sales that you just mentioned, we announced it a couple of weeks ago. We actually sent our first shipment a few weeks ago. That invoice is now gone. Our second shipment has now been invoiced as well with the second client. So, yeah, it's really good. You know, and I came home that evening, the Wednesday, and I just felt like everything had drained from me because it's reality now. You know, it's been such hard work. Every business is, you know, we're not mourning, we're not complaining, but it's really good. And what has started to happen as well for the kids, we've had an awful lot of inbound inquiries as well, which is really good, really positive. So yeah, incredible year. Lots more gone on as well, by the way.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot more behind the scenes than you're able to tell us. But first of all, just deal with the money that you raised recently. Obviously, things still need sort of kitted out there in the facility that you have, which I visited during the summer, which was impressive in itself, but obviously needs to just be completed so that you can up the amount that you can actually produce yourself. So just give us an idea how that money will be spent, Jim.
As we, you know, we announced to the market a couple of months ago, we drew $1 million of equity. We announced to the market we'd like to raise $10 million, of which potentially $5 million of equity to capture some of the EIS money and the other $5 million as convertible loan note to capture some of the VCT money. Now, if we don't raise the 10, it's, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's just if we do raise the 10, it means we can speed up our production and go and capture more of these orders. We've since done another announcement we completed last week, I think it was, on another $2 million, which really shows strength to, again, what we're doing. And, you know, raising capital in this current market is difficult at best, but, you know, we are managing to do it. And we're managing to raise the equity at the current share price. So we're getting there. We're also looking at other opportunities. So, you know, as you say, Kevin, part of the money is going to go to further build out our facility. We already are live part of it, so it's to further build out. So what we're looking at is, do we raise it as a convertible, all of it, or do we look at some asset finance? And there's, you know, and the asset finance today is relatively cheap money compared to debt because of the higher interest rates. So we're exploring all opportunities of how we bring capital on at the right price that's right for the shareholders to then just keep going capturing, you know, some of the market that we've got. There's one other interesting project we've been working on, which I'm only allowed to say so much. We have now signed heads of terms. This is with a European company that we are looking at licensing some of our IP technology for growing the product. And with that, we will transfer some of our genetics to them in Europe, or then and to grow under license for us to then allow us to fulfill our European contract. So again, we're looking at opportunities that if it takes us longer to raise capital to fit out our facility, well, we'll supply to the German contract through our European IP partner. And that does a number of things. It gives us a lot, you know, hopefully we'll be able to bring that revenue online even earlier than what we said back in the next year. But the other thing is it gets around this Brexit thing as well. You know, it keeps costs down. You know, the Brexit, whether it's cannabis or widgets are selling, the Brexit thing is still not fully baked out. It is slow sending products into you. So that's the other reason why we're looking at that opportunity. So watch this space for Q1 next year. Hopefully we can get that deal over the line.
Good. No, I mean, we chose Celadon as one of the stocks of 2024 for Roche PR for a few reasons, but just explain to the investors the two very distinct parts of Celadon, because we have, I think, the, you know, the flower situation, you know, growing, selling, getting distribution for this. But the bit that really should excite people, I think, is the pharma side of the business. So just explain to people how that sits.
Yeah, so what I'd like to do, Kevin, is if you can imagine a triangle. And if we look at the top of the triangle, we've got Celadon Pharmaceutical. You know, we've been very clear from the day I founded the business or co-founded it. We are a pharmaceutical company. We're not a cannabis company. We're a pharma company. If you look at the pyramid, if you look at the left-hand side, the bottom left, that side of the business is to produce what the industry calls an API, which is an active pharma ingredient. So our licenses allows us to grow the product, either sell the flower or extract it and sell the API. And we sell that into the, let's call it the pharmacy world, i.e. big pharma, small pharma, whichever pharma. That's the contract we are starting to sell. So that's our, you know, one of our core strengths in our business. And that's hugely revenue generative in the years to come. The opportunity in the UK alone is colossal. If you look at 8 million people with chronic pain in the UK, use in our facility, Kevin, it's huge. And we can only produce enough, you know, for 50,000, 60,000, 70,000 patients. So the opportunity is incredible. So that side of the business will just keep growing and growing and growing. Excuse the pun, not just keep growing flower, but growing in size and in revenue and market share. You know, and that's whether it's UK, Europe, or, you know, shipping stuff around the world. That side of the business is our, what we call our API side of the business.
And Jim, just to put some color on that flower, pun intended, what is the sort of margin that you're likely to get with economies of scale on those growing and then selling of the plants?
You know, as you've seen, we are growing indoors. Some people say, oh, your margins are squeezed when you're indoors and think, you know, it's cheaper outside because there's, you know, the sun's free and things like that. Again, look at what I said at the beginning. Triangle, we're pharmaceutical. The products we are producing are the highest of quality. And that's not me just saying that. Our clients are saying that. We are managing to get a premium for our product. I don't want to mention how much per gram, but we are getting a premium for it. And the reason for that is because we are growing it, producing it under a very, very high control environment, which you've seen for your own eyes, Kevin. It isn't a glass house. I'm not knocking glass house. They have a place in you know, this world. You know, you can relate it to the car industry. You've got your Rolls Royce and you've got your, let's call it Mercedes. There's thousands of Mercedes, but there's less room. And we're in that Rolls Royce space. So our margins are more higher. We're low volume, high margin. I don't want to be giving you 60-78% margins because, you know, when you start scaling, obviously you get better scale of economy. And now that we've got our license for our facility, we are already looking at a number of other potential facilities where we will grow in them facilities and bring the product back to what we call mothership for processing. Again, that will help our margins. So I hope that answered your question, Kevin, as accurate as I'm allowed to.
Yes, yes, I understand that you have things preventing you giving us the overall, but it gives people a good picture. Okay, so that's the left point of the triangle. So please now explain the other part of the triangle.
So the right-hand part of the triangle is what you know, what the industry calls that true farm side. And within that true farm side, you've got your standard stage 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials, which takes a long time and costs lots of money. And on the peripheral of that, you've got other things such as the LVL program that we've got. It's the only UK government-approved program for cannabinoids to study pain. I won't go on all the bit about all the benefits on this call because it'll take hours, but it really does allow us to open up the market and give the evidence to the regulators that they have asked for, that hopefully they will reimburse for. So that's an evidence-based trial, which we, you know, we are looking to launch that next year. We already did a soft launch, what we call a beta. We've already had a number of patients on it. The results have been astonishing, not only just for pain, but for sleep. And every single patient that's on it has reduced their dependency on opioids. Like, some are on zero. You know, some have gone back to work. It's frightening. And they would have been on it 6-9 months.
And we know, don't we, that if you're not sleeping well as having pain, it just exacerbates the situation. So if you get good sleep, it removes a lot of the symptoms, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's lots of studies going on in Canada and around the world, US at the forefront of it, around PTSD and stress. You know, sleep is a big issue. You know, we all get agitated with it. And on top of that, you're pumping all these 30 to 40 tablets a day into you. You know, I've sat with some ex-rugby guys, and they're on 60-odd tablets a day. You know, their terminology is, we're rattling. That's their term. Rattling. And we get them on this, and, when they're down to 3 or 4 a day, it's incredible. But for me, it's, when I speak to these patients, it's just the change in their life. And, you know, their partner's ringing me and saying, you know, one of them said, thanks for giving me my wife back. You know, and it just took me back, and I had to make a joke. And I said, no problem. Do you want another wife? I've got one. Yeah, it was it's astonishing. So that's one part to the trial in that triangle. But to further expand on that, we've got 3 diseases that we're looking at. One is our primary. I can't mention it on the call, unfortunately, but hopefully, well, we will be announcing it next year because we want to launch it next year. We're working with a prominent UK university, and they'll dual work with one in the US. We have the formulation, we have the delivery mechanism, we have some IP around it. We know it works. We've been working on it for 2 years in the background. We want to launch it next year. Now, we're fortunate in the UK, without going a bit too technical, we're fortunate that we can launch it as a special whilst we're going through this 5, 7, 10 years process of clinical trial. The real huge opportunity for us is to go down that FDA US clinical trial as well at some point. Now, whether we do that on our own or whether we partner with another company, you know, Big Pharma or whatever, we're exploring that at the moment. Mm. Another disease, you know, and it's a shame, it's always harsh when you call it the disease, but that's what the medical fraternity call it. Another disease that we own 20% of a company called Kingdom Therapeutics. Amazing company. We've been with them now, I think, 2 and a bit years. Liz, the CEO, is doing a fantastic job. They've gone through phase 1. And this is for autism in minors. They've managed to get some IP. It's actually pending at the moment. So that, again, is a unique opportunity for Celadon. We took a stake in that company. And if that trial is successful, it will be a Celadon product that they will use moving forward. The API extracted oil that we've got a license for, we will put that into that formulation. And that's what we use. So that is the true pharma side, Kevin. But to do
that... So give people an idea. I mean, just for the sake of argument, in terms of the valuation of something that you were able to do for, let's say, for the autism, I mean, what is that worth? I mean, what could that market be worth in the UK and the US?
So it's about an $8 billion market. And remember, this is for minors. So it's a small cohort. It's not quite an orphan drug. It's a small cohort. But if you look at chronic pain of 8 million alone in the UK, that's a $20, $30 billion industry. But what I will do, Kevin, is give you an example of, you know, Celadon, this isn't new to the world. Celadon hasn't come up with some magic wand around clinical trials and valuations. But I'll give you the closest example I can. And it's a British company called GW Pharma. Lots of people talk about them. I always do. And that's mainly because God knows what they went through 20 years ago when they were founded, because I know what we've had to go through. And remember, it was a different legal framework 20 years ago. So GW, British company, they were on AIM. I think they went on about 2004. They were bobbing along. They had to do full clinical trials because they couldn't operate in the specials like we can now. So they didn't have the left-hand side of our triangle. They only had the right-hand side. So they were constantly having to raise big money. In 2013, they were on a $100 million value, pre-ord on NASDAQ. And within that 12 months, they had 6 children with an indication for epilepsy, not approval. They didn't get approval at this point. And they went up to $1.4 billion. 2014, fast forward, they were at, I think, think it was something like 1.8 billion, something like that. And then they were teetering around about the 4 billion mark from 2016 onwards. And then they got acquired in 2021 for $7.2 billion. And just to give you some stats on that, they got that because they got an approval for epilepsy, FDA approval. They got a number of other approvals, but FDA US. Today, they have 23,000 patients. Sounds a lot, but it's not in the grand scheme of things, with $700 million in revenue, and they sold out for $7.2 billion in 2021. So they're now, unfortunately, not a great British company. They're now a great US company.
Yeah.
So you can see they were at 200 on AIM, dual-listed, exited for 7.2 with, yeah, reasonably good revenue, but we could get them out of our flower. So, you know, that's an example, Kevin, of the potential if you get a license-approved drug. Now, as I say, Kingdom, that's a partnership, but it will be our product. The other diseases that we're coming out with next year, we're going to launch it on our own with a view then to potentially get a partner. We are talking to a number of the big guys. I can't mention on this call that are potentially interested in partnering with us on this.
Yeah. I just want to go back to the LVL health thing, Jim, you know, the NHS. Because obviously, I think it's like 5 years after medical cannabis has been legalized, but still hasn't funded those clinical trials. And then obviously you come along and you've got this 5,000 patients, obviously the first clinical trial of its kind. You know, you mentioned you've had a bit of a soft launch going on, and you've seen the result have been, you know, very impressive. What could come out of this? Is it likely that, or potentially that in the future, that the NHS, if it's all approved, that they would look to you to supply them in going forward? I mean, what could come out of this?
I think that's the best case, the best outcome. You know, the trial has been designed in conjunction with the government guidelines, NICE's guidelines. So what we don't want to do is turn up in 2 years or 3 years' time and say, here's a bunch of data, and say, well, actually, that's not what we wanted. So it's being designed within guidelines. I think that's the best case, reimbursement.
Yeah.
The worst case is the trial will open up the UK market for awareness or private prescription. And that is still massive. You know, there are people there. When I've studied this market even more after over 5 years, there are people there that not only want it, but actually need it, because the current medication they're on, i.e. the opioids, isn't working. So they need an alternative. The doctors want an alternative in their toolbox to prescribe.
Yeah.
The government is saying, stop prescribing opioids to the doctors. And the doctors saying, well, that's good and well, but what have I got? So we're hoping that a cannabinoid can be one of, not the perfect, you know, not the be-all and all-all golden bullet, but we're hoping that it will be one of the alternatives that they can prescribe. But if we can just pick up, Phil, on one of your comments that, you know, a lot of people get mixed up. I don't know if it's trying to beat the government or not. We never try and beat them up. There's two elements here. There's the government reimbursing, and then there's the government backing research and development. They're two separate things. You know, LVL took 3 years and cost nearly £5 million to get approval. It shouldn't have took that long, and it certainly shouldn't have cost that much, because that money could have gone into, you know, funding and getting it out there earlier. So
yeah,
that's an issue. But we as a commercial company had to make the decision, go, let's just go and do it, because we can't wait for these government grants. You know, if you look at the US, to date, the US in 2022 deployed $200 million in R&D for cannabis alone. The UK has not even put £10 in. We don't know how much. They keep saying they are.
Do you think what is the reticence? Do you think they're just so used to prescribing these opioid painkillers by the GPs that they're not interested in running? I mean, well, I'm just trying to think, because I know that.
Yeah, it's... Honestly, there's not one answer. I wish I could sit here, Phil, and say, this is the... I think it's... The UK has been going through a complete flux, as every country is, because of COVID. And, you know, we're seeing now with the NHS strikes and things like that. So I've sat with regulators, and honestly, they're not anti it. They're really not. You know, I've sat on... You know, I've spoken to the chairman of the NHS Ethics Committee. They're not anti. They are for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just very cautious. We're a very cautious country.
Yeah.
Well, it proves it. It's took us 4 years to get our licensing.
Yeah, I think the Home Office have also been pretty negative, haven't they? A warning of regular use can lead to dependence and, you know, mental health problems, from what I've seen, which is, it doesn't fill you with confidence, as in, you know, when they're coming out, because they control it ultimately, right?
No, I don't. That's not. That's the MHRA. That, sorry, Phil. That's the medical. The Home Office are around safety, theft, and security. Okay. It's the MHRA. But again, yeah, you get doctors that are saying this. But go back in history. Go back 10 years, 20 years, 100 years. People were scared of getting on the first train because it went 15 miles an hour. Look at what speed we're going at now. It will change, but you've got to. What I've learned in 30 years of building businesses, certainly in the UK. You have to try your hardest to work with these regulators. You can't keep going in and beating them up and saying, you've got to try and work with them. And it's frustrating. You know, I have had sleepless nights when I've got shareholders saying, when are you going to get this license to get to revenue? And I'm talking to a civil servant saying, well, yeah, we'll let you know how it goes. And, you know, don't bother me till January now because I can own my Christmas holidays, you know, but you can't fight with them. You've just got to work with them. It's frustrating. What's frustrating for me is, and I keep telling our team, every single day we are not producing product for these patients, it's another day that that patient isn't having a good quality of life. That's it for me. That's our core driving our business. Yes, I know shareholders want me to get to revenue. We're going as fast and hard as we can. But for me, the best drive to motivate our team is every day that patient isn't getting a product, whether it's from us or somebody else, there's another day that's not good quality of life. We've actually got some of the patients coming in January to meet some of our team as well, just to show them, you know, that is our drive. Patient first, product after. Nailing it.
Very good. So going backwards again from all the different things you said about this other company that listed on AIM and then went to the US, do you see that the natural place for Celadon is going to be probably as a big farmer, probably on NASDAQ?
Obviously, again, I've got to watch how far I go here, but I don't think there's any CEO in the UK, certainly not on AIM or mainly the main market, not thought at any point, do we need to look at potentially dual listing or relisting in the UK? And we as Celadon have certainly been looking at that. I was in New York a couple of months ago. You know, I went to the New York Stock Exchange, I met the NASDAQ guys. I met a number of big funding offices, you know, KKR, BlackRock, Fidelities of this world, DK. And honestly, it was like night and day. You know, I'm not having a go at our UK investor group, but it was like night and day. I was sat there and it's because, as I said at the beginning, Kevin, pyramid, pharmaceutical at the top. Yes, the risk of cannabis, they don't like cannabis, and actually these big funds can't invest in cannabis. But lo and behold, they can invest in a pharmaceutical company that deals with cannabis. So most of them, if not all of them, had a position, or still do have, in what was GW Pharma, that's now Jazz Pharma. So they've been on that journey. They've seen that journey. So when I went in to meet them, it's, oh, you're Jazz number two and you're British. You know, it was fantastic. There was only one out of, I think, 12 meetings that weren't sort of with us. So we are certainly looking at it. You know, the thing that we need now, a lot more cash on balance sheet to real go and capture. We've proven we can do it. We're proving every day we're doing it. But it is certainly something we're looking at from a valuation standpoint, from a capital standpoint. But just as important, the US is the largest pharmaceutical market in the world apart from China. So some of these diseases we were addressing, what an opportunity for Celadon in the US. Just like Jazz, as I mentioned, GW, Jazz now owns, you know, however, thousands of customers, you know, predominantly US, 700 million revenue they've got. It just seems to make a lot of sense that we should be looking at a US presence, you know, whether that's just to FDA approval or whether it's a dual listing or something like that. We are certainly exploring it. As every CEO, I think, not everyone, but, you know, most of us should be.
Yeah, I mean, it seems the logical way to go, let's put it that way. So, I mean, you got to understand.
It's a proven trodden path, Kevin, isn't it? You know, not everyone does it. You know, not everybody's done it, but there are a few. But in the pharma world, you know, a lot of the UK farmers head office here at the listed in the US. It's they're doing it for a reason.
They're doing it for a reason, sadly, because, you know, the valuation really doesn't stack up in the UK. That's the problem.
No, and it's difficult. You know, and people keep saying to me, oh, don't worry about your valuation. But I said, that's good and well, but you go and pitch and try and raise money then. when your valuations are going backwards or wherever, you know. And, and if you just look at the example that was out a few weeks ago, Hotel Chocolate, you know, great company, they were working hard, EBIT, everything, they were doing it, smashing it. The valuations come back, they were trading at what, 200 million value, whatever it was, and Mars came along and took them out at 500 million. It just, it's such a shame. I really don't want the UK to miss out, but I can't change the UK market. I'm not, we're certainly not big enough. One thing that I really like to emphasize, and I was with a couple of the parliamentary guys not long ago, and they asked me, you know, what could they do if they got into power? And I said, do not miss the opportunity that's in front of us as a UK company or R&D for cannabinoids within medical. Or not just cannabinoids, psilocybins, anything botanical. Do not miss that opportunity. I don't think they can really fix the capital market, but I know they're going to try and hopefully they'll, but that's going to take a long time to bake in. I don't think that's going to be an overnight success, even if, you know, they relax on the pension schemes and things like that. It's going to take a while. But from a pharma R&D point of view, we've got some incredible skill set in the UK from a pharma stance.
Yeah, let's hope they use it. So one of the reasons why we chose Celadon as one of our picks of 2024 was undoubtedly because of the pharma angle and the stock. I think the profitability that you will attract because of the sales of these products is going to be pretty sensational as well. But the reality is that the really, really big play here is that the pharma play, the fact that once you have these things, they'll be licensed for X number of years and you will just print money after that situation.
Yeah, and obviously I'm not going to disagree with you, but, you know, as I say, I'm of an age now where we're building lots of businesses. I'm old school. I like to see revenue and profit, and I'm not built just for full clinical trials. But the fortunate thing is we can get to that revenue profit and we can do that clinical side on the other side. So we're not only creating further IP, but you're absolutely right, Kevin. You know, this in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, it's a multi-billion pound business. It's, unless something catastrophically goes wrong, I just can't see it not be, because there is a need, as I've said, there's a clear need for an alternative, and we are part of filling that gap of the alternative.
Yeah.
And the other thing, Kevin, was a lot of people said to me, how are you so sure? And I said, well, this product's been around for hundreds and thousands of years. It's just been buried for the last 80 years because, you know, all sorts of politics and things like that. It's such an opportunity. It's not the golden bullet. It's not going to fix every disease, but the opportunity is there in front of us and other companies. And that's where I think, I hope I'm around long enough to see it be one of them great British companies. So, you know, of old, GSK's, your things like that.
I'm sure you will be. Okay, this is the 12 Stocks of Christmas. So the question I'm going to pose to you now is, what is the most unusual, crazy place that you've spent Christmas Day in?
Oh, gosh. Don't know, really. I'm pretty damn conservative and boring, unfortunately. I suppose Lapland on a bloody sledge, being both freezing cold.
Well, that's not conservative at all.
Being pulled by the Huskies.
Yeah, yeah. But the funniest thing just before we finished was my son was, I don't know, say 8, something like that. We'd finished and it was nice. It was great for the kids. It was sort of the last year he were believing in part. It wasn't mine. I still believe in it. And the funniest part about it is we finished the holiday. We got back on the bus to go to the play. And there's an old boy in front talking away, and my son's looking at him going, I recognise that voice. And it was actually Father Christmas, being his normal siblings. So this Chinese guy, who actually, I'll never forget, he had a pharmacy, and he's looking at me as well saying, why don't we shut this guy up?
Brilliant.
That's a good story.
Yeah, so he didn't really let the cat out of the bag too early. So I suppose that one, the rest of it, I'm pretty damn boring. I've got to talk more.
Very good. And then we're on the food theme podcast as well, you know, the roast. What is your guilty pleasure? I know you like to prepare a roast. We've talked about that, and you enjoy the time in the kitchen. But what is the sort of one bit of food that you look forward to having maybe once a year at Christmas, a bit of a guilty pleasure?
I suppose it's the Christmas pudding. You know, you're stuffed, aren't you? And you still manage to try and get a bit of that down. You know?
Get the brandy sauce on it as well. It's rich as possible.
Yeah, but I love that. yeah, you know, a bit of salmon, bread, glass of champagne, even though I don't really like champagne. But, you know, a couple of sips of that. And as I say, I'm pretty damn boring, really. It's basic stuff, but I do like my turkey.
Very good. All right. Well, on that note, we'll just wish you all the best. You know, look forward to welcoming you back onto the podcast in 2024. We wish you every success in the future, Jim.
Yeah, thank you, lads. And thanks for your support, honestly. I know how hard you've been helping us and championing us on. And thanks for coming out, Kevin. You know, and I knew once you'd come out, the light bulb would go on and what you saw, the quality and the scale that we're operating at. So thanks again for your support.
Absolutely. No problems. And hopefully Phil's going to go and see
you. Yeah, I'll be up
see you in the new year as well. So you can see the thing in operation, which I didn't.
Yeah.
But, I have great...
Just on that one, Kevin, it weren't that you didn't see in operation. We couldn't let you in. We have, you know, well, that's we have live client.
Failed the background checks, didn't he?
No, he didn't. Because all the products contracted, we try and restrict people going into the grow areas. From a, I don't want to be derogative, you're coming from a contamination point of view.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I can be contaminated.
It certainly smells.
Brings all them bugs and viruses from Egypt, doesn't they, usually?
That's right.
All right, on that note, we'll say James Short, CEO of Pharmaceuticals. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.